Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Killer Cast. Hey, y'all. Okay, so I'm here by myself today because Jaden is on vacation, but we will be having a brand new guest coming on soon, which I'm super excited for. We actually have a couple brand new guests that want to come on, so yeah, obviously I'm super stoked for that. It's okay. You won't hurt my feelings. I know the episodes I do with other people are usually better. I get it. I'm trying to get more people on so I don't have to do, you know, that many episodes on my own. I just feel like it's honestly nice to just, like, have a second person there weighing in on things, listening to the topic, making conversation, forming their own opinions, just, like, to have that second, like, person there is, I don't know, it just adds a different dynamic, and I feel like it makes it easier to listen to be honest. So, I think that's a good thing, and I want more of it, and, yeah, we're going to make it happen. So, I also want to apologize because I'm, like, super stuffed up today. My allergies are fucking killing me. So, if I sound disgusting, I'm so sorry, but I have to, like, be on top of this podcast. I had to do this episode, and I have to record it. So, I'm sorry if I sound like, I don't know, like a man. I just, yeah, I'm stuffed up. I can't help it. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about today's case, which is the Villisca Axe Murders. And I hope I'm saying that right. It's V-I-L-L-I-S-C-A. I think it's Villisca. I might sound really stupid, but that's what I think it is. So I think this one is like a little bit true crime, a little bit paranormal. Like, this is supposed to be paranormal week, but this kind of is like walking on the edge of both, because like the murders were real, but there are also like paranormal aspects, like, you know, different paranormal things that have happened there. So I don't know, I guess you'll just have to see. So let's start with the crime. June 9th, 1912. It's a Sunday morning and everyone's going to church. The people we're going to be focusing on today are, I feel like I'm going to say these names wrong too, but I think it's Lena and Ina, or Lena and Ina. I have no idea how to say these names, but we're going to go with Lena and Ina, I guess. They are the daughters of Joseph and Sarah Stillinger, and we're also going to focus on the Moore family, consisting of Josiah Moore, who was 43 years old, Sarah Montgomery Moore, who was 39, and their children Herman Moore, who was 11, Catherine Moore, who was 9, Boyd Moore, who was 7, and lastly, Paul Moore, who was 5 years old. So the first two girls, the Stillinger sisters, were supposed to go to their grandma's for dinner and, like, have a sleepover at her house after church, which I guess there was, like, some type of children's program. They did it every year. It was going on that evening, so they ended up going back to the church later that night. But instead of going back with their grandma, Catherine Moore invited them to come spend the night with the Moore family. The children's program thingy, I think they called it Children's Day. It is some type of kids program through the church. And that began around 8 p.m. and ended around 9:30 p.m. So after that was all said and done, they had gotten through their little program and, you know, done all that. The Moores and the Stillinger girls walked back to the Moore residence and arrived sometime between 9:45 and 10 p.m. They go to bed, but unfortunately what would be discovered the next day is something that has completely stumped people for over a century. So the next morning, the Moore's neighbor, Mary Peckham, was hanging up laundry outside around 5 a.m. As time went on, Mary started to worry, as no one had come out to start the daily household tasks, and it was going on like 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. So she decided to walk over and check on the house, and she knocked on the door, but no one was answering. And when she tried to open the door herself, it was locked from the inside. So since she couldn't get in and all the curtains were drawn, she ended up calling Josiah's brother, Ross. So when Ross arrives, he tries banging on the door, he tries shouting, he tries to look through the windows, but again, all the curtains were shut. The windows that didn't have curtains were covered with the family's clothes, and when no one answered, Ross starts to like kind of look around, like looks through his keys, and he ends up finding a key that works. So when he walks in, he goes through the parlor into a bedroom. When he opens the bedroom door, he sees the bodies of Lena and Ina laid on the bed with dark stains near and under them. He quickly ran back outside and told Mary to call the sheriff. All the members of the Moore family were also found deceased upstairs in the bedrooms. So based on like the testimonies given from Mary Peckham, the neighbor, and the people from the church that like saw them there at the children's program, it's assumed that someone broke into the Moore's home between midnight and 5 a.m. and brutally murdered everyone in the house. Everyone had been bludgeoned in the head with an axe, and all their faces were covered with bedclothes after they died. Now, I do want to read you like a list of things that were at the crime scene, like just different kind of facts about the crime scene, I guess. And I'm taking this directly from VeliscaIowa.com, and they have like a whole page there that tells you everything about the crime and all that, like the history. So definitely read that if you get the chance, because there's a lot of like information on it. That's where I got a lot of my information for this video, among a couple other websites too, but like, you know, it's an interesting read to like actually see like how they were going through their whole day before this happened and like how the crime scene was handled. So anyway, yeah, I'm gonna read you this little section of the website that tells you about the crime scene. So, okay, so they say that obviously the news traveled quickly in the small town. The neighbors were curious. Law enforcement officials lost control of the crime scene, and it said that up to 100 people traipsed through the house gawking at the bodies before the Villisca National Guard finally arrived around noon to cordon off the area and secure the home. The only known facts regarding the scene of the crime were 8 people had been bludgeoned to death, presumably with an axe left at the crime scene. It appeared all had been asleep at the time of the murders. And the axe belonged to The axe belonged to Josiah. Doctors estimated the time of death as somewhere shortly after midnight. The curtains were drawn on all the windows in the house except 2, which did not have curtains. Those windows were covered with clothing belonging to the Moores. All of the victims' faces were covered with bedclothes after they were killed. A kerosene lamp was found at the foot of the bed of Josiah and Sarah. The chimney was off and the wick had been turned back. The chimney was found under the dresser. I'm gonna have to look that up really quick because I think we have different ideas of what the word chimney means. Okay, so I just looked it up, and it looks like it says it's a glass tube that protects the flame of a lamp. So maybe that's what they're talking about. maybe I just sound really stupid right now, but that's what I found. And they were talking about a lamp, so I'm guessing that's what it is. Maybe I sound really stupid, but I'm not editing this out because I can't be the only one. A similar lamp was found at the foot of the bed of the Stillinger girls. The chimney was also off. The axe was found in the room occupied by the Stillinger girls, and it was bloody, but an attempt had been made to wipe it off. The ceilings in the parents' bedroom and children's room showed gouge marks apparently made by the upswing of the axe. A piece of a keychain was found on the floor in the downstairs bedroom. A pan of bloody water was discovered on the kitchen table, as well as a plate of uneaten food. The doors were all locked. The bodies of Lena and Ina Stillinger were found in the downstairs bedroom off the parlor. Ina was sleeping closest to the wall with Lena on her right side. A gray coat covered her face. Lena, according to the inquest testimony of Dr. F.S. Williams, lay as though she had kicked one foot out of her bed sideways, with one hand up under the pillow on her right side, half sideways, not clear over, but just a little. Apparently, she had been struck in the head and squirmed down in the bed perhaps one-third of the way. Lena's nightgown was slit up and she was wearing no undergarments. There was a blood stain on the inside of her right knee and what the doctors assumed was a defensive wound on her arm. Dr. Lindquist, the coroner, reported a slab of bacon on the floor in the downstairs bedroom, lying near the axe, weighing nearly 2 pounds. It was wrapped in what he thought may be a dish towel. Okay. That's weird. A second slab of bacon about the same size was found in the icebox. And Lindquist also made note of one of Sarah's shoes, which he found on Josiah's side of the bed. The shoe was found on its side, however, and it had blood inside as well as under it. It was Lindquist's assumption that the shoe had been upright when Josiah was first struck, and that the blood ran off the bed into the shoe. He believed the killer later returned to the bed to inflict additional blows and subsequently knocked the shoe over. And then they go on to say on this website that, you know, obviously the crime scene was not handled well. There was hundreds of people in and out of it. And how they go on to say that they believe if it had been committed today, that it would have been an easy crime to solve. But now it's over 100 years later and, you know, whoever did that is probably long gone by now, so we really won't ever know. But yeah, so that is all the stuff about the crime scene, which is, you know, pretty wild and crazy. And it's crazy that they haven't solved it, honestly. So, you know, it wasn't really handled that well, but let's move on to the paranormal side of things. So, over the years, several paranormal investigators have gone into the house to try and figure out who killed these people so long ago. These include paranormal investigator Dave Christensen from Omaha, Nebraska, and even Ghost Adventures did an episode on it. I'm going to go ahead and also read a little info from the Ghost Adventures episode. I'm getting this directly from the Ghost Adventures fandom wiki website, so like I always say, take everything with a grain of salt. This is all paranormal. It's not based on fact. I'm just kind of providing some of the crazy things that have happened, and I'm just giving the info that's been given, you know, publicly about the paranormal aspect of this. So I'm not saying that any of this is fact, but here is some of the evidence that was in the Ghost Adventures episode. So there was a couple EVPs, and those were, quote, "Where is she? I killed 6 kids. They're around upstairs. We're gonna keep them in the dark. 'Cause they don't step in heaven yet. You're gonna give up blood. Herman's gonna get you. It's a gathering place." And then there were spirit box voices that said, "No, Lena, wanna play, Paul, everyone's fine, Andy." Residual noises like creaking footsteps, laughing, using motion activated cameras. There was footsteps captured approaching a door that mysteriously slammed shut, and the motion-activated camera captured a dark mist that appeared to be following Nick out of a room. So, yeah, that is all from, like, stuff that happened in the Ghost Adventures episode. And, like I said, I got that right from the Ghost Adventures wiki website that, like, talks about the, like, all their their episodes. And it gives, like, a rundown of everything that's happened in them. So, yeah, I'm not saying it's all factual, but that was what I could find on the episode. I do also want to bring up that Martha Lynn, who has owned the house for a really long time now, said that sometimes overnight guests in the house will leave toys for the ghosts of the children. And the house is available to stay in overnight. They also do day tours. It's, I think it's like $428 for a group of 1 to 6 people, and then like $75 for an additional person after that. So, yeah, but I think that would be kind of cool. And, Martha also did show a picture of a red ball with a floating orb above it. I tried to save the picture so I could post it on Instagram, but the article I read it in says I have to buy the photo, and I was like looking around because I was like, okay, well, I mean, if you took the photo, then I understand that, but I couldn't really figure out how to buy it either. So I'm just gonna, you know, like, the website I found it on is gonna be linked in my sources anyway, so if you want to go take a look at it, I do recommend looking at that page, because there's a lot of pictures revolving the house on there, and a lot of good information. So I will put that down in the description whenever I list my sources, if you guys want to look at that. So yeah, there's definitely a big paranormal aspect to this place. It's, you know, as well as this case still being unsolved, it's just kind of like eerie anyway. Like, 100 years and this case is still unsolved. But what do you guys think? Do you think it's haunted? Like I said, it's like $428 for a group of 1 to 6 people, so if I got, like, 5 other people to go with me, I would fuck around and do it. I kind of want to find out, like, maybe go leave a toy. I said I wanted to go to the Lizzie Borden house, too, but I just want to go to, like, all the creepy places. I want to go to, like, the Stanley Hotel, and, like, I just love that shit. And I want to, like, the Queen Mary, that boat. Yeah, like, I don't know. It just sounds so fun. If only I had more friends that would do shit like this. But yeah, I know this episode was kind of short. I'm sorry. It's because I'm alone. I don't have that conversation barrier, and I feel like I talk too fast when I make these episodes sometimes by myself, but I can't help it because I just get so caught up in the story and, like, telling it and everything that I just keep going because I get excited to, like, tell you guys what happened. But I don't know. I end up with 20-minute episodes, you know, 15-20-minute episodes whenever I'm by myself. But, you know, this is why I need that guest, that co-host type energy, because it's just nice to be able to, like sit here and be like, oh, okay, well, what do you think? And have somebody answer back and be like, oh, and be able to, you know, share those opinions, see if they differ, discuss it. You know, it's like you're more part of a conversation, whereas whenever I'm alone, I'm just really telling a story. So, but yeah, I mean, be the co-host for me. Like, go to Instagram, comment on the pictures, talk about what you think, like, I don't know, interact a little bit, and then maybe I won't feel as bad about putting out a 20-minute episode. But okay, guys, that is all I have for you today. Don't forget, expect new guests soon. I have a couple people lined up who want to do an episode, so we are getting that done. As always, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at KillerCastPodcast and Twitter at KillerCastPod. Bye!